It was a number of years ago, and I was out Christmas shopping the week before Christmas. I noticed there was an overabundance of men in the store at that time. I'm an equal opportunity critic, so I have a suspicion that there are lots of women, too, who shop late, okay? But it's kind of a joke that we tell about men waiting till the last minute, because it's true. I mean, a lot of us did that. I don't do it anymore. I've been married to Linda for too many years. I don't know if I mentioned this last week, but she had virtually all her Christmas presents not only purchased but wrapped at least 2 weeks ago. That's along with living with her mother, taking care of her, coming down here periodically. So when you're married to somebody like that, you just don't shop late. You don't. You get it done. And so I'm pretty much finished myself. But it wasn't that way years ago. I was in the mall back in Minnesota, and the crowd was, you know, if you look down the aisle of the store I was in, it was just heads, you know, people. It was just solid. Really extreme, I thought, even then. Well, as we moved along in this herd, looking for things we couldn't live without, or we thought somebody else couldn't, I heard a voice. And that voice has followed me all the way into this worship service tonight from those many years ago. And the voice was a woman, and I don't know who it was. I never saw her, but she was close enough to hear. And what she said was this: I'll be so glad when Christmas is over. Well, you know, pastors have their ears tuned for things like that. My radar picked it up immediately. And I recall thinking at the time how sad that was. And it kind of forced me to stop for a moment in the midst of this great throng I was in and actually look around. And the conclusion that I drew and that I have held ever since, or at least the observation that I made, was look what we've done to ourselves and look what they have done to us. Now, don't get me wrong, I like Christmas shopping. I actually like shopping. My wife can't stand it, but I don't mind it. I don't mind going out there and rubbing shoulders with people, and you actually meet people occasionally. And, you know, if nothing else, you can give them a little relief when you're standing in line, you know, strike up a conversation, you know, share the pain a little bit. So I don't mind shopping. It's kind of a nice diversion. But, and I like Christmas shopping. You know, I enjoy buying gifts for other people. It makes Christmas kind of special in that sense when you can think about somebody long and hard and come up with something you think they really might like, and connect with them in that way. So I think that's good, and I think we ought to do it, and I'm not any kind of a Grinch where that is concerned. But as Christian people, as we look at Christmas and the season that it represents, and we think back a ways in our history, we can get a little perspective, I think, on what Advent is really for with regard to Christmas. In the ancient church, and including the early, middle, and high Middle Ages, the great festival of the church was always Easter. Christmas really wasn't much. And that was the case all the way through the Reformation period to up until about the 18th century and the beginning of the 19th century. Because something happened. For centuries and centuries, the church understood what was primary. That was Easter. The cross and the resurrection are by far the more significant recognition and observation. Nobody ever was saved by Christmas. Christmas didn't save anybody. It was a beginning, it wasn't an end. Church knew this, and so the great festival was always, and it still is, Easter. But as the Industrial Revolution took hold in Europe and then in America, of course, what happened was these great industrial societies began to create products. Up until then, it was cabinet makers and it was woodworkers and stonemasons and artisans and craftspersons of all kinds that produced goods and services for small communities generally. Or if they were massed together in large cities, they produced goods and services for people on a larger scale. But it wasn't until the Industrial Revolution that the goods and services really started flying out the door. And with it, of course, came the need to sell things. And Christmas didn't take a lot of imagination on the part of merchants to realize that you can't do a lot with Easter, but you can do a lot with Christmas when it comes to giving and gifts and selling things. And so here we are. The last couple centuries, the culture, in its obvious need to, you know, sell things, and we encourage that because we want to keep our economy certainly functioning, has had the result of driving us from Easter to Christmas, and driving the church as well from Easter to Christmas. I suppose where we see this at Christmas time most clearly, in one sense, is in the Christmas Eve service. I can say those things about the Christmas Eve service now because I would never say them on Christmas Eve. But Christmas Eve, like Christmas relative to Easter, is really not much compared to Christmas Day, which is the great festival of the sacrament and of the birth, the nativity. But the candle lights and the soft music and the ambiance are just too much to resist. And so we have found ourselves driven also from Christmas Day, the great festival day, to the more attractive, aesthetically pleasing evening before Christmas. It is common now throughout the country to find churches that have canceled permanently their Christmas Day service. I mean, would you cancel Easter because you had an Easter Eve service, which is the Paschal service, the night before Easter? It wouldn't even come up because, you know, there's nothing to compete with it. So there we are. Now, in the ancient church, they recognized the importance of the festivals, Easter, Christmas to a less extent. And so the time prior to Easter, for example, was set aside as a special time to train and to educate, to catechize converts to the faith. That's what Lent was. It was not a series of worship services as much as it was a series of classes where new converts were brought together to learn the essentials of the faith. And then on the evening before Easter, the night before Easter, they gathered in the church or wherever they gathered together and were often baptized. And then on Easter Sunday, they were presented to the congregation, to the community, risen with Christ in the new life. So even there, you can see we've come a long way, haven't we? And not necessarily for the better in some respects. Advent then was also a time in the church year that was set before Christmas to try to throw a sea anchor out on the rush to Christmas. And this was a long time ago. To kind of settle things down and to think together about what is this all about, this coming of Jesus into the world. Why did he have to come? And of course, the simple, straightforward answer to that question is because the world is such a mess. And that's the hard, cold truth of it, you see, that our culture and increasingly over the years the church has simply tried to gloss over, to candy coat. And we're in real peril, I think, at this point now, because it has been so overwhelmed by the culture that it has become a caricature of itself. So a service like this, at a time like this, and the Sundays in Advent are opportunities for the Christian and others who may come within our orbit to gather together, to think together about what all this means. Why are we doing this? And I suspect that's what that woman in the mall all those years ago was probably also wondering. Why am I doing this? Why am I running around like an idiot, spending all this money, worried about the schedule, worried about what we're going to eat, worried about when the relatives are going to come, worried about, why am I doing all this? Is this what Christmas is? You see? And if we are not the ones to take the time to help ourselves and others understand this, then who will? Who will? So Advent is a time we contemplate, we reflect, we throw out the sea anchor, as I say, on our lives to slow things down a little bit and to remember, to think together about what this is for. Well, as I said, the marketplace culture has done a bang-up job of driving us all into the stores this time of year and making us at least feel like we need to do this and buy all these things. That's fine, I guess. Our society needs us to do that, so until something else better comes along, I suppose we have to keep the engine going. But all this frantic activity and all this kind of running and scurrying to the point of kind of losing oneself is hardly what this season is for us. And I think to some extent, you know, as each of us in our own way consider what this means and we kind of alter our patterns a little bit, we can provide a certain kind of witness to people. Instead of just jumping on the merry-go-round and hanging on for dear life, you know, that really isn't say much to people. I remember back in the 1970s, there was a movement that didn't gain a lot of traction. There are still some around who observe this here and there, but it died out, but you know, it's still around here and there. And that was to move Christmas to August, which was, in fact, closer to the time when Jesus was born. He was actually not born in December. He was born probably in the summer. And that's pretty well attested. So these people were saying, well, let's just get away from it all. Let's just abandon the whole cultural nonsense and let's just do Christmas away from it all and have it kind of settle into what it needs to be. Well, there's an argument for that. I suppose that was a corrective that needed to be heard, and it does need to be heard, I think, all the time in one way or another. But at the same time, the early Christians chose December and the 25th, around that time, precisely because the pagans were all making merry. The great Roman festival of Saturnalia was the equivalent of our Christmas. It was a midwinter celebration of light in the midst of darkness. And the Christians latched onto it, partially because the themes that the pagans were using and the hopes that they were tying themselves to gave them an opportunity to witness to the pagans. So, you know, it's not a bad thing the church did that. You can imagine some Christian, for example, standing around the water fountain in some Roman city down there in the public square, and a couple of ladies or a couple of guys are dipping pitchers in and drawing out water, and somebody strikes up a conversation about Saturnalia. Are you going to the, you know, to the temple of Saturn or to the whatever local haunt they're going to have this celebration in and join the feast and so forth and so on? And the Christian who's drawing his or her water says, well, we are going to celebrate the light in the midst of the darkness, but it's not quite in the way you think. So let me tell you about the light that we know of. You see, that went on. So they used the pagan holiday as a vehicle. And it was also a time when they could kind of remain relatively anonymous because there was so much activity in the great cities and towns that the Christians could meet during those times, particularly when they were under great suspicion and not fear too much that they would be discovered and harassed. So here we are. We've, in a sense, kind of come full circle here in the last couple centuries. We've reached critical mass with the pagan midwinter festival that roars around us. We have the opportunity to meet these expectations and hopes that the people around us are engaged in, that represent really not much more than a day, some gatherings with people, some goodwill and some gift giving, some food, trim their homes with all the Christmas decorations, trees, and all the rest of it, and many of them never darken a church door. That's paganism. Form and no substance. So what do we do? How do we act? What do we say in a time like this as all of this swirls around us? Well, we only have 12 days left, so we got to make it quick, whatever we're going to do, right? Isn't that right, 12 days? Yeah. But who's counting, right? Even that, you think about it, is really funny. I mean, that's a real whip, a real go, isn't it, you know? Only 12, only 10, only 9. Get out there and shop, shop, shop. Well, that's what it's supposed to do. It's supposed to create anxiety, tension, you know, fear, you know. The wall is moving toward me. I got to do something. I got to do it now. So we slow down as Christians. That's really what we, I think, need to do. think about our longings this time of year. A lot of that out there is underneath, you know, all the activity and the falderal. There are human beings like you and I. There are people out there who are caught up in the maelstrom, who are moved along by the stream. Not really sure why, but they enjoy aspects of it. But beneath it, there are expectations. There are hopes. There are things that they long for. And of course, we know that this time of year can be the occasion for some of the most dashed hopes and broken dreams in families when they come together. It's a very difficult time of year for many people because there is such expectation, such an atmosphere, you know, of color and hope. And yet the realities of life are often far from promising and hopeful. And so these collide at this time of year. So Advent helps us bring into sharper focus things for us as Christians that are important for us all year long. You know, I said a couple weeks ago in my sermon that these church seasons are just arbitrary designations. They are kind of containers, so to speak, in which we place important themes of the church so we won't lose track of them. And then we take them out, you know, throughout the year and say, well, let's dust off Advent here and, oh, there's hope. That's right. Got to remember that. And we do this, see, throughout the church year. But these are things that are part of our life all the time. And so we want to keep them in focus during Advent because they help us to remember that our hopes and longings are not meant to trail off into other hopes, things and other people that we may want to attach them to think that that's where our hope lies. But rather, we gather in Advent to remember who our hope is. Jesus Christ, our Savior, has set aside for us, as the letter of 1 Peter says, an imperishable and undefiled gift, inheritance, that will not fade, will not go away, you know, won't be unwrapped and the paper thrown out and the gift, you know, kind of coddled for a while until it winds up in a drawer or a closet or re-gifted, as we like to say these days. It's a terrible, terrible word, awful thing. There's a whole sermon on that practice, which I won't preach tonight, but to take a gift someone gives you and to hand it over, I mean, that's just hard to understand. So Christ has given us his gift. He's insured it. He's kept it for us. Won't perish. Won't go away. And our hope as Christians is attached to that promise. And so during Advent, we come together then to reflect on this great theme of human longing. So real, but so often misplaced, misdirected. The Advent themes bring us back to ourselves, like Lent, to how things actually are in our lives, and why we need one to come for us. We are confronted again with our fears, our fragility, our longing for friendship, and our loneliness, our need for companionship, and yet the realization often of how difficult it is to find any real connection with people in life, brought back to think together about what is faith? Trust in God. What does it mean to hope in him, to love in his name, to forgive, to live as his person? Well, as with all our great themes of the faith, of course, they find their clarification and their focus, their fulfillment always in the cross. And this is why Advent is, as one has called it, a little Lent. Because as we face our deepest longings, our hurts, and the way the world has its way with us, there is simply no other place for us to go but to the cross. It is deeply tragic, really, that woman years ago said those words. I'm so glad when Christmas is over. And of course, now, I suppose in the wisdom of a few years behind me, I probably would have looked around and asked, who was that? Say that again. And then I would have tried to find her and take her aside and say, wait, this isn't Christmas. All this stuff, this isn't what it is. Let's get out of here for a minute. I'll go buy you a cup of coffee. Let me tell you about Christmas. We could use a break anyway. And I would have taken her to the cross. And I would have tied that cross to the manger. And to the one who came to meet this desperate need of ours. This desperate need of ours to be known, to be understood, to be forgiven, to be loved, to be fulfilled, to be free from anxiety, and to rest in peace. Well, we, of course, have no illusions as Christian people about what kind of impact, at least noticeably, that we're going to have on the modern version of Saturnalia that's going on right now all around us. We want to be careful that we don't, even though we can be critical of it, as I tend to be here, we don't want to dismiss it, because we are part of this culture, and it is an opportunity for us. As we move around in the days, as we engage in the festivities, in the practices, in the customs, which include the shopping and all the running around, we will meet and interact with other people. And if we can see by God's grace through all of the falderal to the needs and the longings there, we may be able to do something and be something for someone. For those out there who perhaps aren't voicing it quite so obviously, but who are thinking and feeling as they go through all of this, I wish Christmas was over. We surely must have something to say to those who feel that way. And I know we do, because we have our Lord and his cross and his resurrection. We have the great imperishable gift and inheritance of his grace and promise. And if somehow by God's mercy and grace at work in us, we may be able to give that to someone. Then next year, and the one after that, and the one after that, perhaps they will say, even with all the nonsense that we put up with, I'll be so glad when Christmas is here. Amen.